ओम अज्ञानतिमिरंदस्य ज्ञानंजनशलाकाय चक्षुर्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। श्रीचैतन्य मनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपकदामयं ददाति स्वागतं तिघं। श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नितानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवास हरि गौर भक्तवृंद, हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय। So, it may surprise you that I'm making an attempt to say something before an assembly of devotees. But I thought that since we are venturing to review a few slokas from the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, although all of Bhagavatam is a sweet, the lotus feet of Lord Krishna were held very carefully upon the breast of the gopis. The gopis held the lotus feet of Krishna upon their breasts. So just as the gopis wanted to embrace the lotus feet of Krishna to their heart, so similarly Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and all Gaudiya Vaishnavas embraced the first and second canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, those cantos are considered to be the lotus feet of Krishna. However, no one can blame the honeybee for going for the honey. The face of Krishna is like a honeymoon face. Krishna, Shyam Sundar, just, you know, you see him and how could you not be attracted to his face? One time Srila Prabhupada was taking darshan of the deities. I forget which temple it was, but I just remembered this incident where a devotee came up to Srila Prabhupada and asked him that in the Bhagavatam it says that if one is not free from sex desire, then one should not go beyond the first and second cantos of the Srimad Bhagavatam. What to speak of approaching the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam if one is not free from sex desire? That statement is given in one of Srila Prabhupada's purports in the first canto. So the devotee was asking Srila Prabhupada that it says that when you take darshan of the deity of Krishna, that you should start by seeing his lotus feet and then gradually, you know, with reverence toward the deity, go to his knees and then to his waist and then to his handsome chest and then to his, you know, honeymoon face. You know, so the devotee was asking Srila Prabhupada, does the same principle that applies to hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is equivalent to the lotus feet of Krishna, I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but this is the idea, that does that same principle apply when we're taking darshan of the deities, that if we're not free from sex desire, should we not look beyond the lotus feet of the deity? And you know what Prabhupada's answer was to that question? Does anyone remember hearing about this? Prabhupada's answer was, how can you live without seeing the face of Krishna? That was Prabhupada's answer. So because we're venturing to dabble, read a little something, hoping to get something to, let's say, fire us up for the auspicious event of Sri Krishna's Janma anniversary celebrations, because we're reading Srimad Bhagavatam's 10th canto in that light. So I've seen that there is kind of a systematic approach. We're going through some chapters, but honestly speaking, I don't think it is, even though every verse of Srimad Bhagavatam is identical with Krishna, every verse of Srimad Bhagavatam has specific potency for gradually, either indirectly or directly, promoting our, achievement of the ultimate goal of life. But I have to say that most of the leelas that we've been reading about up to now, they have been naimittika leelas. So I want to read a few things. I hope you can bear with me. Sometimes reading, especially if the reader is not a very good reader like me, it can be a little tedious. But if you hang on, and try to concentrate and make some sense out of what I'm going to present, I hope it's sensible. But I would like to read a few things from Chaitanya Charitamrita and Krishna book, and if we have time, I hope maybe we have to go over time a little. If we do go over time and you do have to go, then you have my permission to humbly bow out, to take prasadam, or to do whatever else you think is more important than hearing whatever I have to say. So in Srimad Bhagavatam, 2nd canto, 9th chapter, 36th verse, it is said, and I'm going to skip Sanskrit because I'm not a great Sanskrit scholar. I'm just going to read the English translations mostly, just to save time and save you the botheration of having to tolerate my lack of adeptness in the matter of reading Sanskrit. A person who is searching after the Supreme Absolute Truth, the personality of Godhead, this is the way it's translated in the Bhagavatam, must certainly search for it up to this, in all circumstances, in all time and space, and both directly and indirectly. Could you please put away the camera? Put the camera away, please. Nonsense. Must certainly search for it up to this, in all circumstances, in all space and time, and both directly and indirectly. And in Adi Lila, chapter 1, verse 57, the same verse is translated in a little different way. Quote, a person interested in transcendental knowledge must therefore always directly and indirectly inquire about it to know the all-pervading truth. It's quite a different translation, but the gist is the same. There's an interesting portion of the purport that I'm going to read here. Those who are serious about the knowledge of the transcendental world. Now my question is here, is there anyone here that is not serious about the knowledge of the transcendental world? Who is not serious? Don't be overly humble. Anyway, but we know that we should be serious, right? At least that much credit we have to give ourselves. At least we've come into the fold of, you know, information concerning the necessity of progressing in our spiritual life. So anyhow, Srila Prabhupada says, those who are serious about the knowledge of the transcendental world, which is far beyond the material cosmic creation, must approach a bona fide spiritual master to learn the science both directly and indirectly. Tasmad gurum prapadita jigyasu shreya uttamam. Shreya uttamam, jigyasu shreya uttamam, means that you have to be serious enough to want to know what is the ultimate good, you know, of my life. What is the ultimate goal of my life? And then you have the right or the eligibility, the adhikar, to approach the feet of Sri Guru for inquiring, you know, how to solve the problems of life and all these things. So Prabhupada is saying that must approach a bona fide spiritual master to learn the science both directly and indirectly. One must learn both the means to approach the desired destination and the hindrances to such progress. The spiritual master knows how to regulate the habits of a neophyte disciple, and therefore a serious student must learn the science in all its aspects from him. One should try to purchase a ticket to go back home, back to Godhead. Thank you, Srila Prabhupada, for giving us the impetus. This is, he's saying, so try, maybe try means not doing, as Prabhupada would sometimes say, but still, try we must. The price of such a ticket is one's intense desire for it, which is not easily awakened, even if one continuously performs pious activities for thousands of lives. All mundane relationships are sure to be broken in the course of time, but once one establishes a relationship with the personality of Godhead in a particular rasa, it is never to be broken, even after the annihilation of the material world. So now we're going to get into some interesting topics of discussion, mostly from Srila Prabhupada's side, but then I'm going to take the liberty of developing it. One should understand through the transparent medium of the spiritual master that the Supreme Lord exists everywhere in his transcendental spiritual nature, and that the living entity's relationships with the Lord directly and indirectly exist everywhere. In this material world, In the spiritual world, there are five kinds of relationships with the Supreme Lord. Shanta. What's the next one? Dasya. Has anyone not heard of these things since the time that one has come into contact with this Krishna consciousness movement? Is there anyone here who has not heard of Shanta, Dasya, Sakya, Vatsalya, and Madhurya Rasa? So, you know, excuse me, but I feel that there's some need to discuss these things in the assembly of devotees to encourage, at least nourish to some extent, our enthusiasm to pursue the path of ultimate perfection, which ultimately means to attain the realm of Braja and serve Radha and Krishna in one of these Braja rasas. Shanta, Dasya, Sakya, Vatsalya, and Madhurya. The perverted reflections of these rasas are found in the material world. Land, home, furniture, and other inert material objects are related in Shanta, or the neutral and silent sense, whereas servants work in the Dasya relationship. The reciprocation between friends is called Sakya, The affection of a parent for a child is known as vatsalya, and the affairs of conjugal love constitute madhurya. These five relationships in the material world are distorted reflections of the original pure sentiments, which should be understood and perfected in relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master. In the material world, the perverted rasas bring frustration. If these rasas are reestablished with Lord Krishna, the result is eternal blissful life. A conditioned soul must ultimately approach a bona fide spiritual master and try to understand perfectly the material and spiritual worlds and his own existential position. Here, the words anvaya vyatire kabhyam directly and indirectly suggest that one must learn the process of devotional service in its two aspects. One must directly execute the process of devotional service and indirectly avoid the impediments to progress. So now I'm going to reiterate some points from Bhaktivinoda Thakura's Sri Chaitanya Shikshamrita. The direct search for absolute truth is called artha pravritti, which involves hearing, chanting, and remembering Krishna's nitya lilas. And the indirect search, anartha navritti, involves hearing, chanting, and remembering Krishna's auxiliary naimittika lilas. So long it is necessary to indirectly cultivate via anartha nivritti by hearing auxiliary lilas, i.e. killing demons, etc., for purification of the heart, up to that time it is not possible to dive deep into the relishment of rasa. Up till the time when the result of indirect cultivation of the diverse lilas arises, meaning anartha navritti, the platform of anartha navritti, that is the result of hearing the naimittika lilas, is anartha navritti, it is necessary to cultivate side by side both the nitya and naimittika lilas as described in the Bhagavata. So taste rasa by entering into Ashtakalya Lila and by tasting other Lilas of Braja, namely the Naimittika Lilas, you destroy all evils which stand in the way of attainment of real rasa. Then the vision and attainment of Goloka will be easy. The Lila of Sri Krishna is twofold, that is, nitya, eternal, and naimittika, occasional. In Golok, nitya lila or Ashtakalya lila exists at all times. In Boma Vrindavan, that Ashtakalya lila is mixed up with occasional lila or naimittika lilas. Going from Braja and coming back and killing asuras are occasional lilas. Such work is inevitable on the part of the aspirant while he lives in this material world. Occasional lila is in existence at Golok in a negative way, only in this world that has been practically exhibited. Occasional lilas which are adverse to the eternal lila have been reflected upon for the instruction of the devotees. Aspirants will hope that those lilas will destroy their own evil. Occasional lilas are, 1, the killing of Putana. Putana is a deceitful guru teaching enjoyment and salvation, bhukti and mukti. So crafty sadhus who are fond of these represent Putana tattva. For showing mercy to his pure devotees, child Krishna kills Putana to safeguard his newborn feelings in their hearts. 2. Shakata Banjana, breaking of the cart. This represents load-bearing, this Shakata Asura cart, in the form of the cart, represents load-bearing arising out of old and new bad habits, lethargy, and vanity. The sentiment of child Krishna removes that evil by breaking Shataka, the carriage which carries the load, you know, of, what is it? Old and new bad habits, along with lethargy and vanity. 3. Killing Trinavarta. This is a display of vain pedantry, that is, vain gloriousness for learning, resulting in bad argumentation, dry reasoning, dry logic, and company of men fond of these evils, out of which diabolical opinions arise. The sentiment of child Krishna, being afflicted with the humility of his devotees, kills Trinavarta and removes the thorn that stands in the way of their bhajan. Yamala Arjun Banjana, breaking of the twin Arjun trees. The pride and arrogance originating from aristocratic birth and wealth produces hatred toward beings, debauchery, and drinking, which again causes looseness of tongue, cruelty due to unkindness and shamelessness. Krishna, out of mercy, breaks down the tree of evil. 5. Killing Vatsasura. The evil performance which is done out of greed, which originates from a childish mind guided by others, is an evil by the name Vatsasura. Krishna, being merciful, destroys it. Bakasura Vada. Killing Bakasura. Cunningness, hypocrisy, and false behavior represents Bakasura. Should be the other way around. Bakasura represents those things. Cunningness, hypocrisy, and false behavior. Without destroying this, pure devotion to Krishna cannot arise. So the idea is, by hearing these leelas, these anarthas are eradicated. 7, Agasuravad, killing Agasura. Removal of sinful mind, violence to beings, and giving troubles to others out of hatred, malice, etc. This is an offense against Sri Harinam. Brahma Vimohan, the bewilderment of Brahma. Skepticism arising out of cultivation of karma and jnana, etc., and lowering down sweetness of love in light of majesty. This also is an offense to be avoided. Lowering down the Madhurya elements of Brajalila in light of the Aishwarya elements of the Dwarka or Vaikuntha Leelas, etc. These are considered to be an offense. As a matter of fact, I have read, although don't quote me on it because I can't recall right off where I read it, but Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in one of his writings, has said that it's an offense to the higher Dham. If one is in the Dham, in Braja Dham, it's an offense to glorify an inferior Dham like Dwarka. If in Vrindavan Dham we say, Dwarka Dham ki, like this, you know, then that is considered to be an offense to the higher Dham. So one should not say place unnecessary deference, or give unnecessary deference to the Aishwarya devotion while residing in Vrindavan. Rather, one should try to discover the beauty of the Madhurya Leelas of Radha and Krishna in due course of one's spiritual evolvement. One should have that mindset to make progress from the reverential devotional platform to the higher Madhurya platform. So also, we have killing of Danaka. Danaka represents gross intellect, want of pure knowledge, ignorance of tattva due to idiocy, and contradiction of sarup jnana. In other words, knowledge, contradiction of knowledge of one's own sarup. Kaliya Damana, subduing Kaliya serpent, which we heard about yesterday, removal of vanity, maliciousness, doing wrong to others, crookedness, and unkindness. Davagni Vinasha, extinguishing the wild forest fire, fighting against others' opinion, inner hatred toward other communities, disregard of God's worship by others, battle or any sort of conflict and clash. That is what that forest fire represents. And hearing this pastime extinguishes these bad traits in the sadhaka. Pralamba vada, removal of licentiousness, desire for personal gain, worship and honor. See, Davanala, this is spelled wrong. Anyway, this is the second forest fire when Krishna drinks the second forest fire. This forest fire represents the generation of hindrance to religion and religious persons by spreading atheism. Now, you know, you would have to really contemplate these things deeply in order to understand it, how, you know, through practical samadhi, you may be able to, that means absorption in pure devotional practices, you may be able to grasp the essential import of the correlation between these various anartas and the particular demons that are killed by Krishna. The Jagyak Vipra, the Brahmins performing sacrifices, represents indifference to Krishna out of pride for Varnashram Dharma, and Indra Puja Varana, prohibition of worship of Indra, giving up the idea of many gods and removal of the notion that I am Brahman. Deliverance of Nanda from Varuna, removal of the idea that beatitude of bhajan is increased by drinking wine or taking any other intoxicant, including ganja, including crack, including smack. So let's say saving Nanda from the clutch of the serpent, restoration of devotional truth swallowed up by Maya bodies and leaving their company. That is achieved by hearing that pastime, and killing Shankachuda and snatching away his crest jewel, avoidance of greed for name and fame, and morbid desire for the company of females. Killing of Aristasura, showing negligence to bhakti on account of seeing external glamour, and pride of deceitful religion. Keshi Vada, killing of Keshi, destruction of vanity, that I am a great devotee and preceptor, and pride out of richness, richness and worldly attainment. And then killing Vyomasura means leaving company of deceitful devotees, thieves, etc. Leaving the company of deceitful devotees. So I guess you should all immediately leave. The scriptures proclaim that Lord Krishna previously descended to take away the burden of the earth. Now we're reading a little from Chaitanya Charitamrita. To take away this burden, however, is not the work of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Brajendranandan Krishna. The maintainer, Lord Vishnu, is the one who protects the universe. But the time to lift the burden of the world mixed with the time for Lord Krishna's incarnation. When the complete Supreme Personality of Godhead descends, all other incarnations of the Lord together meet within him. It is important to note that our acharyas, including Srila Prabhupada, have pointed out that the killing of the demons in the course of the Bhoma-lilas of Brajendranandan Krishna wasn't done by Brajendranandan Krishna. It was done by Vasudev Krishna, and some say also by Shiradakshai Vishnu. So therefore, when we hear these Naimittika lilas that are done, like the killing of the demons, etc., mostly these things are done by someone other than our worshipable Brajendranandan Krishna. In other words, it's Vasudev Krishna, just like Vasudev Krishna preached to Arjuna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, Mam Ekam Sharanam Braja, go to Braja and surrender to me there, which is what is concluded by our acharyas. That's the meaning of the word Braja in that shloka. Go to Braja. So, in other words, Vasudev Krishna is acting as guru in one capacity there. So similarly, Vasudev is acting as guru in the matter of cleansing, helping us to cleanse away the anartas in our heart from that standpoint. But then there are higher aspects of guru tattva. The higher aspects, I mean, Radharani is certainly a higher aspect of guru tattva, you know, than Vasudev Krishna. And Brajendranandan Krishna also sometimes acts as guru himself directly, especially in the form of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, Lord Narayan, the four primary expansions, Vasudev, Sankarshan, Pradyumna, and Aniruddha, Matsya, and all other Leela incarnations, the Yuga avatars, the Manvantar incarnations, and as many other incarnations as there are, all descend in the body of Lord Krishna. In this way, the complete Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna himself, appears. At that time, therefore, Lord Vishnu is present in the body of Lord Krishna, and Lord Krishna kills the demons through him. Thus, the killing of the demons is but secondary work. So here we are in the Naimittika Leelas, as we just described, where these various anartas, it's like hearing these leelas kills the anartas, demon-like anartas within our heart, but we should know that that is secondary work. The killing of the demons is but secondary work. I shall now speak of the main reason for the Lord's incarnation. This is Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami speaking here. Prema rasa niryasa korite asvadana rag marg bhakti loke korite pracharana. Rasik Shekhar Krishna Paramakuruna E Dui Hetu Hoite Ichchara Udgama. The Lord's desire to appear was born from two reasons. This is the main reason why he came. So please bear this in mind when we're celebrating Sri Krishna's Janmashtami tomorrow. The Lord wanted to taste the sweet essence of the mellow of unalloyed love of Godhead. And he wanted to propagate devotional service in the world on the platform of spontaneous attraction. Rag Marg Bhakti Loke Korite Pracharan. He wanted to propagate Rag Marg Bhakti in this world. That's why he came. That's why he displayed all these leelas, so that we, as Kali Yuga reprobates, will get the opportunity to hear about these leelas from the lips of Shukadev Goswami and become enchanted by the prospect of going back home, back to Braja, back to Golok Dham, where the eternal Braja is manifest in its supreme glory. Thus he is known as supremely jubilant and as the most merciful of all. That is Krishna. Aishwarya gyanete sabha jagat mishrita. Aishwarya stitila prema preme nahi moa priti. Prita, excuse me. Lord Krishna thought, all the universe is filled with the conception of my majesty, but love weakened by that sense of majesty does not satisfy me. If one regards me as the Supreme Lord and himself as a subordinate, I do not become subservient to his love, nor can it control me. In whatever transcendental mellow my devotee worships me, I reciprocate with him. That is my natural behavior. Yeyatam mam prapadyante. Tangs tatayvi bhajamyaham. In whatever way my devotee surrenders unto me, I reward them accordingly. Everyone follows my path in all respects, O son of Pritha. If one cherishes pure loving devotion to me, thinking of me as his son, his friend, or his beloved, regarding himself as great and considering me his equal or inferior, I become subordinate to him. Devotional service rendered to me by the living entities revives their eternal life. O my dear damsels of Braja, your affection for me is your good fortune, for it is the only means by which you have obtained my favor. Krishna is telling this to the gopis when they met him at Kurukshetra during the solar eclipse. Mother sometimes binds me as her son. She nourishes and protects me, thinking me utterly helpless. My friends climb on my shoulders in pure friendship, saying, "What kind of big man are you? You and I are equal." If my beloved consort reproaches me in a sulky mood, that steals my mind from the reverent hymns of the Vedas. Taking these pure devotees with me, I shall descend and sport in various wonderful ways, unknown even in Vaikuntha. I shall broadcast, he's going to broadcast these pastimes, and that's exactly what Srila Prabhupada did. Don't think otherwise. See, this book, even in 1973, when I joined the movement, we were distributing thousands of these books, 1973, even to meat-eating carmies at the McDonald's hamburger joints. We would be standing in line when all the people are coming into the drive-in window or whatever, standing back in the line and catching them. And they may even be, you know, munching on a hamburger with one hand, and we're putting Srila Prabhupada's Krishna book in the other hand. And you would be amazed at what's in this Krishna book. And how it is that Prabhupada thought that it was legitimate for us to be giving such esoteric knowledge to the most degraded, fallen conditioned souls. But that was Prabhupada's mission, and don't think otherwise. Yes, I shall broadcast such pastimes by which even I am amazed. Even Krishna is amazed. The influence of Yogamaya will inspire the gopis with the sentiment that I am their paramour. Neither the gopis nor I shall notice this, for our minds will always be entranced by one another's beauty and qualities. Purport. Srila Prabhupada's purports. There are a few purports, so please hang on. Listen very carefully. And I hope you get something out of all this. In the spiritual sky, the Vaikuntha planets are predominated by Narayan. His devotees have the same features he does, and the exchange of devotion there is on the platform of reverence. But above all these Vaikuntha planets is Golok, or Krishna Loka, where the original personality of Godhead Krishna fully manifests his pleasure potency in free, loving affairs. Since the devotees in the material world know almost nothing about these affairs, the Lord desires to show these affairs to them. Not that it should be kept hidden from them. Please. Not that it should be kept hidden from them. We are what are called as part and parcel of Krishna. Srila Prabhupada has said in one conversation, room conversation. You can find it, you know, in his archives, lectures, it's there. We are part and parcel of the Krishna, and partner and parcel means partner. Partner means we have the same mission. Business partners, we have the same business as Krishna has. When Krishna wants to reveal these Madhurya pastimes to the people of this world, then Krishna's partners, part and parcel, business partners, at least those who are in the Sankirtan movement of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, should also similarly follow suit and assist Krishna in his business of revealing these pastimes to the fallen souls of this material world. In Golok Vrindavan, there is an exchange of love known as Parakya Rasa. Prabhupada goes on further to say, it is something like the attraction of a married woman for a man other than her husband. In the material world, this sort of relationship is most abominable, but because it is a perverted reflection of the Parakya Rasa in the spiritual world, where it is the highest kind of loving affair. Such feelings between the devotee and the Lord are presented by the influence of Yogamaya. The Bhagavad Gita states that devotees of the highest grade are under the care of Daivamaya or Yogamaya. Mahatmanas tamam partha daivim prakriti ashrita. Those who are actually great souls, Mahatmas, are fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness, always engaged in the service of the Lord. They are under the care of Daivi Prakriti or Yogamaya. Yogamaya creates a situation in which the devotee is prepared to transgress all regulative principles simply to love Krishna. A devotee naturally does not like to transgress the laws of reverence for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but by the influence of Yogamaya, he is prepared to do anything to love the Supreme Lord better. To love him better. Those under the spell of the material energy cannot at all appreciate the activities of Yogamaya, for a conditioned soul can hardly understand the pure reciprocation between the Lord and his devotees. But by executing devotional service under the regulative principles, one can become very highly elevated and then begin to appreciate the dealings of pure love under the management of Yogamaya. So it's expected that we're supposed to come to the position of being able to appreciate the pure love under the management of Yogamaya between Krishna and the gopis, or Krishna and his cowherd boyfriends. In the spiritual loving sentiment induced by the Yogamaya potency, both Lord Sri Krishna and the damsels of Braja forget themselves in spiritual rapture. By the influence of such forgetfulness, the attractive beauty of the gopis plays a prominent part in the transcendental satisfaction of the Lord, who has nothing to do with mundane sex. Because spiritual love of Godhead is above everything mundane, the gopis superficially seem to transgress the codes of mundane morality. This perpetually puzzles mundane moralists. Therefore, Yogamaya acts to cover the Lord and his pastimes from the eyes of mundaners, as confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, where the Lord says that he reserves the right of not being exposed to everyone. Naham prakasha sarvasya yogamaya samavritah. The acts of Yogamaya make it possible for the Lord and the gopis in loving ecstasy to sometimes meet and sometimes separate. These transcendental loving affairs of the Lord are unimaginable to empiricists involved in the impersonal feature of the absolute truth. Therefore, the Lord himself appears before the mundaners to bestow upon them the highest form of spiritual realization. Here the Lord is in the form of Bhagavatam appearing before the mundaners. Why? To bestow upon them the highest form of spiritual realization. Where do they go? And also personally relishes his essence. He's appearing, you know, of course he's saying he's appearing, this means that he's appearing as Krishna 5,000 years ago. He's talking about that, but I'm bringing it that he's appearing because this is non-different from Krishna. So that's my contribution to the subject matter here. Therefore, the Lord himself appears before the mundaners to bestow upon them the highest form of spiritual realization and also personally relish its essence. The Lord is so merciful that he himself descends to take the fallen souls back to the kingdom of Godhead, where the erotic principles of Godhead are eternally relished in their real form. Where the erotic principles of Godhead... Mind you, the erotic principles, Srila Prabhupada here is using the word erotic principles, so I don't think it's wrong for us to say the word erotic. It may be grating to some people's ears, but that's because those people are still hung up on mundane moral considerations. So don't be hung up on mundane moral considerations. Not that we as materially conditioned souls shouldn't observe moral considerations in the matter of our dealings with each other, but we should not allow ourselves to be overly attached, so much overly attached to moral considerations that we neglect to appreciate the beauty of transcendence in the matter of Krishna's Parakya Rasa. The Lord is so merciful that he himself descends to take the fallen souls back to the kingdom of Godhead, where the erotic principles of Godhead are eternally relished in their real form, distinct from the perverted sexual love so much adored and indulged in by the fallen souls in their diseased condition. The reason the Lord displays the Rasa Lila is essentially to induce all the fallen souls to give up their diseased morality and religiosity, and to attract them to the kingdom of God to enjoy the reality. A person who actually understands what the Rasa Lila is will certainly hate to indulge in mundane sex life. For the realized soul, hearing the Lord's Rasa Lila through the proper channel, means the disciplic succession, will result in complete abstinence from material sexual pleasure. Thank you, Srila Prabhupada. Adi 431. Pure attachment will unite us even at the expense of moral and religious duties, dharma. Destiny will sometimes bring us together and sometimes separate us. And here's Srila Prabhupada's purport. The gopis came out to meet Krishna in the dead of night when they heard the sound of his flute. Srila Rupa Goswami has accordingly composed a nice verse. See Adi 5, 224. that describes the beautiful boy called Govinda standing by the bank of the Yamuna with his flute to his lips in the shining moonlight. Those who want to enjoy life in the materialistic way of society, friendship, and love should not go to the Yamuna to see the form of Govinda. The sound of Lord Krishna's flute is so sweet that it has made the gopis forget all about their relationships with their kinsmen and flee to Krishna in the dead of night. By leaving home in that way, the gopis transgressed the Vedic regulations of household life. This indicates that when natural feelings of love for Krishna become fully manifest, a devotee can neglect conventional social rules and regulations. In the material world, we are situated in designative positions only, but pure devotional service begins when one is free from all designations. Sarva upadhi viniramuktam tat paratena nirmalam. When love for Krishna is awakened, the designative positions are overcome. That means the love of Krishna, the awakening of love of Krishna comes first, then the designations are overcome by the awakening of Krishna. This is described by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in his commentary on the shlokas in the Rasalila chapters of Srimad Bhagavatam. The spontaneous attraction of Krishna for his dearest parts and parcels generates an enthusiasm that obliges Sri Krishna and the gopis to meet together. To celebrate this transcendental enthusiasm, there is need of a sentiment of separation between the lover and beloved. In the condition of material tribulation, no one wants the pangs of separation, but in the transcendental form, the very same separation, being absolute in its nature, strengthens the ties of love and enhances the desire of the lover and beloved to meet. The period of separation evaluated transcendentally is more relishable than the actual meeting, which lacks the feeling of increasing anticipation because the lover and beloved are both present. So these are points of discussion in terms of, especially in relationship to augmenting the Parakiya Bhav. The Parakiya Bhav is meant to enhance that viraha, those feelings of separation, which intensify the attachment for one another, the devotee and Krishna. Adi 4:32. I shall taste the essence of all these rasas, and in this way I shall favor all the devotees. This is why Krishna's appearing. Remember, this is what we're celebrating tomorrow. Tomorrow we're celebrating, secondarily we're celebrating that Krishna appeared to kill all the demons and save the world. But primarily, he's appearing to nourish the devotees and to deliver the fallen conditioned souls by enchanting them by the prospects of becoming his devotees. Then by hearing about the pure love of the residents of Braja, devotees will worship me on the path of spontaneous love, abandoning all rituals of religiosity and fruitive activity. Srila Prabhupada's purport. If you don't mind, I'm going to carry on a little more. Many realized souls such as Raghunath Das Goswami and King Kulashekhar have recommended with great emphasis that one develop this spontaneous love of Godhead. Check this out, please. Even at the risk of transgressing all the traditional codes of morality and religiosity. This is Srila Prabhupada's purport also. So some people, they like to home in on certain aspects of what Srila Prabhupada's saying, but there's a lot of things that Srila Prabhupada said, and Srila Prabhupada is also saying these things. So don't let these things, go in one ear and out the other. Maybe for some, these things will go over your head. But they're not meant to go over our head. We're supposed to grasp the import of what Srila Prabhupada's trying to give us. That's why we should be reading his books. We should be reading his books to gain something to glean the essence of what Srila Prabhupada is giving us. And what is he giving us? Ultimately, he's giving us Braja Bhakti. Sri Raghunath Das Goswami, one of the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, has written in his prayers called Manashiksha that one should simply worship Radha and Krishna with all attention. You know, never mind all these other affairs. Simply worship Radha and Krishna with all attention. Na dharmam, na adharmam. Shruti gana niruktam kila kuru. One should not be much interested in performing Vedic rituals or simply following rules and regulations. Simply following rules and regulations without understanding, you know, the, you know, how it is that the rules and regulations are meant for the purpose of propping up the evolvement of rag is called niyamagraha. And that's the cause of fall down. Or it's a cause of spiritual retardation. It can retard or stunt your growth in Krishna consciousness if we become overly attached to following rules and regulations without understanding the ultimate purpose in the Vidhi's intention to prop up our progress, the rag platform. Krishna manifests his eternal human-like form and performs his pastimes to show mercy to the devotees. Having heard such... This is Adi Lila. He's quoting from Bhagavatam. Adi Lila 434. Krishna manifests his eternal human-like form and performs his pastimes to show mercy to the devotees. Having heard such pastimes, one should engage in service to him. Not one should engage, one must engage. The actual word is bhavet, which is imperative. Purport. Special natural appreciation of the descriptions of a particular pastime. This is interesting. I've just taken this as a part of the purport, but I thought this was interesting and important for us to hear. Special natural appreciation of the descriptions of a particular pastime of Godhead indicates the constitutional position of the living entity. So, if anyone is still in a quandary as to what rasa he or she ultimately has in his her relationship with Krishna, then this might be a little source of inspiration for you. Inspiration to what? Look within. You see that this left hand of Srimati Radharani, she is holding like this. This mudra is indicating to the souls, to the conditioned souls, to look within. This is the introspection mudra. So Radharani here is telling you to look within your heart and see what kind of love you have for Krishna. That's what Radharani is trying to induce us to do. To be introspective, look within. And how do you know? You'll know when you know. You'll know by ascertaining which pastimes of the personality of Godhead attract you the most. Then you'll begin to understand which inclination, you know, your heart is going in. Which way, you know, which way you're going to go. If you're inclined to the pastimes of Krishna's dealings with the gopis, then you may you may consider that you have the let's say, capacity for cultivating the Madhurya Ras. If you're inclined to hear about Krishna's pastimes with the cowherd boys, then you may consider that you have the inclination for Sakya Ras. If you have the the attraction to the Vatsalya Leelas of Yashoda with Krishna, then that indicates that you have that natural, you know, inclination, that natural capacity for loving Krishna. And then follow your heart. Go for it. Krishna will help. Special natural appreciation of the descriptions of a particular pastime of Godhead indicates the constitutional position of a living entity. Adoration, servitorship, friendship, parental affection, and conjugal love are the five primary relationships with Krishna. The highest perfectional stage of the conjugal relationship, enriched by many sentiments, gives the maximum relishable mellow to the devotees. Trying to throw mud into transcendence with their perversity, the Sahajiyas misinterpret the saying Tat Paritvena Nirmalam and Tat Paro Bhavet. By misinterpreting, they want to indulge in sex while pretending to imitate Lord Krishna. But one must actually understand the imports of the words through the intelligence of the authorized Goswamis. Srila Nartham Das Thakur, in his prayers to the Goswamis, has explained his inability to understand such affairs. His inability means that he's explaining his inability, and now he's going to explain how he hopes to be able to understand the affairs, and that is Rupa Raghunatha Pade Hoibe Akuti Kabi Hama Bujhaba Se Yugala Priti. When I shall be eager to understand the literature given by the Goswamis, mind you, then I shall be able to understand the transcendental love affairs of Radha and Krishna. In other words, unless one is trained under the disciplic succession of the Goswamis, one cannot understand Radha and Krishna. Adi 435. Here the use of the verb bhavet, which is in the imperative mood, tells us that this certainly must be done. Non-compliance would be abandonment of duty. In other words, one must, after hearing these pastimes, one must engage in devotional service to Radha and Krishna. This imperative is applicable to pure devotees. Neophytes will be able to understand these affairs only after being elevated by regulative devotional service under the expert guidance of the spiritual master. Then they too will be competent to hear of the loving affairs of Radha and Krishna. So don't sell yourself short, please. Get it together. Allow the regulative practices of Vaidhi Bhakti to do its dirt, and then transition. Go forward. Don't be hung up thinking that we have no prerogative, that we have no prospects of progressing to the rag mark. As long as one is in material conditional life, strict discipline is required in the matter of moral and immoral activities. The absolute world is transcendental and free from such distinctions because there inebriety is not possible. But in this material world, a sexual appetite necessitates distinction between moral and immoral conduct. There is no mundane sexual activities in the spiritual world. When we say there's no sexual activities, I've added the word mundane because that is like saying Krishna is nirguna. Nirguna doesn't mean that there's no qualities. Nirguna means that there's no mundane qualities. So similarly, when Srila Prabhupada says there are no sexual activities in the spiritual world, it means there are no mundane sexual activities in the spiritual world. The transactions between lover and beloved in the spiritual world are pure, transcendental lava and unadulterated bliss. Here lies the distinction between iron, that is kama, mundane lust, and gold, which is kama, kama rupa, and kamanuga, or kamarupa prema, you can say. Kamanuga follows the kamarupa prema of the gopis. One who has not been... Oh, here's a nice thing. Srila Prabhupada says in the same purport. One who has not been attracted... Now check this out. If the shoe fits, wear it. Be real. Don't let Srila Prabhupada down. Try to catch the drift of what he is trying to get across. One who has not been attracted by the transcendental beauty of rasa will certainly be dragged down into material attraction. Thus, to act in material contamination and progress to the darkest region of hellish life. But by understanding the conjugal love of Radha and Krishna, one is freed from the grip of attraction to so-called love between man and woman. Similarly, one who understands the pure parental love of Nanda and Yashoda for Krishna will be saved from being dragged into material parental affection. If one accepts Krishna as the supreme friend, the attraction of material friendship will be finished for him, and he will know he will not be dismayed by so-called friendship with mundane wranglers. If he is attracted by servitorship to Krishna, he will no longer have to serve the material body in the degraded status of material existence with a false hope of becoming master in the future. Similarly, one who sees the greatness of Krishna in neutrality will certainly never again seek the so-called relief of impersonalist or voidist philosophy. If one is not attracted by transcendental nature of Krishna, by the transcendental nature of Krishna, one is sure to be attracted to material enjoyment, thus to become implicated in the clinging network of virtuous and sinful activities and continue material existence by transmigrating from one material body to another. Only in Krishna consciousness can one achieve the highest perfection of life. That was a good one, wasn't it? Four kinds of devotees are the receptacles of four kinds of mellows in love of God, namely servitude, friendship, parental affection, and conjugal love. Each kind of devotee feels that his sentiment is the most excellent, and thus in that mood he tastes great happiness with Lord Krishna. But if we compare the sentiments in an impartial mood, we will find that the conjugal sentiment is superior to all others in sweetness. Purport. Srila Prabhupada's purport. No one is higher or lower than anyone else in the transcendental relationships with the Lord. For in the absolute realm, everything is equal. But, thank you, Srila Prabhupada. It's not that everything is equal. It's all one, but it's also different. Achintya bheda abheda. There's also a difference. But although these relationships are absolute, there are also transcendental differences between them. Thus, the transcendental relationship of conjugal love is considered the highest perfection. Adi 4:45. Increasing love is experienced in various tastes, one above another. But that love which has the highest taste in the gradual succession of desire manifests itself in the form of conjugal love. Therefore, I call it Madhura Rasa. It has two further divisions, namely wedded and unwedded love. There's a great increase of mellow in the unwedded conjugal mood, that is Parakya Ras. Such love is found nowhere but in Braja. Of course, there is a Parakya Rasa of sorts in Mathura that is relished between Kubja and Vasudev Krishna. But that is not the same order of Parakya Ras. And it is not even on the same level as the Swakya Ras of Dwarka, of the queens of Dwarka and Krishna, and Vasudev Krishna. So the Parakya Ras in Braja, that is relished in relationship to Brajendanandan Krishna, Swayamrup Krishna, that is supreme. This mood, Adi 4:48, this mood is unbounded in the damsels of Braja, but among them it finds its perfection in Sri Radha. Her pure, mature love surpasses that of all others. Her love is the cause of Lord Krishna's tasting the sweetness of the conjugal relationship. Therefore, Lord Gauranga, who is Sri Hari himself, accepted the sentiments of Radha and thus fulfilled his own desires. His own desires means Krishna's own desires. Krishna's own desires to experience the mellows of Radha's love for himself. And therefore, he appeared in the form of Lord Gauranga to accomplish that. And there's another nice purport. I know it's getting later and later. But do you mind if I read a little more? Is it okay? Of the four kinds of reciprocation of loving service, Dasya, Sakya, Vatsalya, and Madhurya, Madhurya is considered the fullest. But the conjugal relationship is further divided into two varieties, namely Swakya and Parakya. Swakya is the relationship with Krishna as a formally married husband, and Parakya is the relationship with Krishna as a paramour. Expert analysts have decided that the transcendental ecstasy of the Parakya mellow is better because it is more enthusiastic. This phase of conjugal love is found in those who have surrendered to the Lord in intense love, knowing well that such illicit love with a paramour is not morally approved in society. The risk involved in such love of Godhead makes this emotion superior to the relationship in which such risk is not involved. The validity of such risk, however, is possible only in the transcendental realm. Swakya and Parakya conjugal love of Godhead have no existence in the material world. Of course, in the Bhauma Lila, if you want to say that's in the material world, but it's really not in the material world, but it is manifest on this material plane. And Parakya is not exhibited anywhere in Vaikuntha, but only in the portion of Golok Vrindavan known as Braja. Some devotees think that Krishna is eternally the enjoyer in Golok Vrindavan, but only sometimes comes to the platform of Braja to enjoy Parakya Rasa. The six Goswamis of Vrindavan, however, have explained that Krishna's pastimes in Braja are eternal, like his other activities in Golok Vrindavan. Braja is a confidential part of Golok Vrindavan. Krishna exhibited his Braja pastimes on the surface of this world, and similar pastimes are eternally exhibited in Braja in Golok Vrindavan, where Parakya Rasa is ever existent. So just in case you were wondering, Parakya Rasa is not something that's just found here in the material world. Parakya Rasa is eternally present in Golok Dham as well. The transcendental mellow relished by the gopis in Braja is super excellently featured in Srimati Radharani. Mature assimilation of the transcendental humor of conjugal love is represented by Srimati Radharani, whose feelings are incomprehensible even to the Lord himself. The intensity of her loving service is the highest form of ecstasy that is known as Madanakya Mahabhav. No one can surpass Srimati Radharani in relishing the qualities of the Lord through this supreme transcendental mellow. Therefore, the Lord himself agreed to assume the position of Radharani in the form of Lord Sri Gauranga. Then he relished the highest position of Parakya Rasa as exhibited in the transcendental abode of Braja. Those either mundane moralists or the immoral who are addicted to sensual pleasures, giving them preference, and who are not aware of transcendental bliss, they're not aware that there is such a thing as transcendental bliss. Is there anyone here, at least in our immediate assembly, not including the passers-by, or the bypassers, I guess you say it? Is there anyone here who is not familiar with the idea that there is such a thing as transcendental bliss? Maybe we haven't fully relished it or realized it, but that doesn't mean that we haven't heard about it and that we aren't aware that there is something which is beyond the so-called bliss of material sense gratification, happiness and distress on the material platform. I think most of us or at least a little acquainted with this idea, right? Okay. So, those, either mundane moralist or the immoral, who are addicted to sensual pleasures, giving them preference, and who are not aware of transcendental bliss, should not hear, remember, or cultivate the divine parakeya conjugal pastimes of Krishna with the Braja Gopis. So that means if you are acquainted, is there anyone here that gives preference to material sense gratification? Is that the goal of your life? You know, to become absorbed in material sense gratification? Or do you understand that the goal of the life is to go beyond all that, to gain a higher experience on the transcendental platform? If you're understanding that, then you're in. If you're not understanding that, then maybe you should, you know, take a hike. You know, pack up your marbles and go somewhere else. The mundane moralist will consider these leelas as material and blame them as ugly and thus commit offense by blaming the transcendental pastimes as being ugly, immoral activities. They commit offense to the transcendental pastimes. Therefore, mundane moralists should not be, enlightened, or they should not be given the opportunity to hear about these pastimes, at least without first breaking their pride of mundane morality. So the immoral lot will take the course of the sahajyas who erroneously use Krishna's conduct as justification for their own abominable mundane debauchery and court their own destruction. However, for those who are faithful, Shraddhavan, Shushrushro Shraddhadanasya Vasudeva Kata Ruchi, those who are faithful, who've done at least some degree of Mahat Seva, Sian Mahat Sevaya Vipro, you know, so then if you've developed a little taste for hearing Krishna Kata, if you have faith that by hearing about Krishna's leelas, all of the leelas, including the leelas with the gopis. Usually it's said the other way. All the leelas, including Krishna's leelas of creation and annihilation of the material world. But I say all the leelas, including the leelas of Krishna's gopis. You know, that if you hear these, if you have faith that by hearing these leelas, you will become purified of mundane attraction. If you become acquainted with these leelas, then you become purified with mundane attraction. So if you have that faith, then you have the eligibility. If you're willing to accept that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, if you're willing to concede to the idea of Krishna's being the Supreme Enjoyer, then you should hear these pastimes. But you should hear it from someone who's following the principles of disciplic succession. This is described by Shukadeva Goswami, by his word Anashruyad. Yes. Anyone who faithfully hears or describes the Lord's playful affairs with the young gopis of Vrindavan will attain the Lord's pure devotional service. Thus he will quickly become sober and conquer lust, the disease of the heart. Here the word bhaktim param means para bhakti, unalloyed, spontaneous, ragmai, loving service. That is para bhakti. Yasya deve para bhaktir, yatha deve tatha guru. Para bhakti in this sense means ragmai bhakti. The one who worships Krishna in ragmai bhakti, and similarly, relates to his guru, or serves his guru in ragmai bhakti, that means on the stage of bhava, Raganuga bhava. For someone who worships Lord and his representative, the spiritual master, on the platform of Rag Bhakti, to him, what happens? Prakashante Mahatmanaha. Yasya Devi Parabhaktir Yatha Devi Tathaguru Kasyaiti Khatita Hyartha Prakashante Mahatmanaha. So all the esoteric imports of the Shastras become revealed within the heart through the agency of Chaita Guru when a devotee has not implicit faith. If you want to say implicit faith means ragmai bhakti for Guru and Krishna, then yes, we can use the word implicit faith. But this faith is not simple faith, not simple shraddha. It means at least lobamaya shraddha. But it is not referring, para bhakti means that bhakti which is transcendental to the modes of material nature, which indicates the perfected stage of ragmai bhakti. Prabhupada himself explains like that. In one lecture in Vrindavan, I have it recorded. I can show it to you some other time. Anyone who faithfully hears or describes the Lord's playful affairs with the young gopis of Vrindavan will attain the Lord's pure devotional service. That is parabhakti, spontaneous ragmai devotional service. Thus, he will quickly become sober and conquer lust, the disease of the heart. And this is another nice point that I would like to bring out with relationship to the distinction between mundane and transcendental sex life. Remember, Srila Prabhupada says that there's no sex life in the spiritual world. But here's where Srila Prabhupada goes a step further in the science of self-realization, which we also distributed by the millions. You must be aware of that. In science of self-realization, you'll find a very, very nice point of discussion. Srila Prabhupada says, in unalloyed love of Godhead, we have to engage our senses. Sarvendriya, all the senses. This means that sex is also to be engaged in Krishna consciousness. That doesn't mean in terms of the grihastha, kirachur, sex life for begetting children. Kirachur means it is also sinful. Whether it's licit or illicit sex, even licit sex is considered to be sinful. Thief is thief. If you're a diamond thief or if you're a cucumber thief, you're still a thief. So you're still a sinner. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that association with one's wife in the Grihastha Ashram is not an anga of devotional service. It's not an anga of devotional service. So when Prabhupada is speaking here, he says, in unalloyed love of Godhead, that means in devotional service. So we must be talking about a devotional service. We're not talking about something which is not an anga of devotional service, namely the hirachur, so-called licit sex life in the Grihastha Ashram for bringing in, more wretched Kali Yuga reprobates to the Krishna consciousness movement. The conception of God as a father or mother does not allow the engagement of one's sex in the service of the Lord, because there's no sexual relationship between the father and mother. But in the conception of God as a lover, there is sexual engagement also. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave the most perfect information of our engagement with the Supreme Lord. In other religious conceptions of life, God is at the utmost taken as the father or mother. Many worshippers in India take goddess Kali to be the representation of God. Of course, that is not sanctioned, but the belief is there. And also in the Christian religion, the conception of God is as a father. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu informs us that one can even have sexual engagement with the Lord. This information is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's unique contribution. In this material world, sexual engagement is considered to be the highest engagement, the greatest pleasure, although it exists only in a perverted form. No one, however, has conceived that there can be sexual engagement in the spiritual world. There is not a single instance of such theology anywhere in the entire world. This information is given for the first time by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. One can have the Supreme Personality of Godhead as one's husband, as one's lover. This is possible in the worship of Radha and Krishna. But no one, especially the impersonalists, can understand Radha Krishna. The impersonalists have no idea. They cannot even conceive that God has a form. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says that not only does God have a form, but he has his sex life also. This is the highest contribution of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This is our Srila Prabhupada. Be happy that we have such a Srila Prabhupada who's revealing these things to us. Now I'm going to, if you don't mind, I'm just going to read a little bit from my new up and coming book, which I was hoping to present to Srila Prabhupada on his Vyas Puja appearance day, but it seems like the press is jamming up the works. So maybe we'll have it, if we're lucky, by Radhastami. Braja lokera bhave ye kariye bhajana se janapaya braja brajananandan. One who worships the Lord by following in the footsteps of the inhabitants of Braja Bhumi attains him in the transcendental planet of Braja, where he is known as the son of Maharaj Nanda. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, 9.131. All bona fide Gaudiya Vaishnava Acharyas agree that the Madhurya Lilas of Braja can only be attained by ascending to the terrace of Kevala Madhurya Prema via the path of Rag Bhakti under the merciful guidance of an emissary of Braja Dham. Furthermore, it is clearly declared by Kaviraj Goswami in his Chaitanya Charitamrita, in his Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, with reference to the appearance of Brajendananda, which we've just read about. This is a brief reiteration, that rag marg bhakti loke korite pracharana. Pracharana means to propagate, to make the super excellence of the path of rag bhakti known to the conditioned souls of this world. Unless one is exposed to the vibrant, esoteric, transcendentally erotic principles of the spiritually constituted damsels of Braja, which surpass all considerations of mundane morality, one can hardly expect to clearly construe the lie of its lustful perversion projected upon the elusive material panorama. It is imperative that the preachers of Krishna consciousness become solidly acquainted Become solidly acquainted with the truths regarding the propriety of the sublime pastimes of Radha and Krishna, so as to powerfully eradicate the misgivings concerning these affairs abounding among scholars, theologians, and the general populace. It is not enough to unconvincingly cower behind a glib formula that denounces any open discussion of the matter before the unconversant. Taboo, prudery, and timidity concerning the enlightened free propagation of the correct conception of the thing have only paved the way for rampant misconception amid those victimized by the vigorous, widespread propaganda of the Mayavadi impersonalists, Sahajiyas, professional preachers of the Bhagavat, and other such
demonic elements waylaying an already darkened contemporary worldview devoid of properly developed personal understanding of the absolute. Sripad Shankaracharya purposefully preached his concocted illusionist philosophy of impersonal monism with the intention to create within the minds of the people in general an aversion to the proposition of a tasteless, impersonal outcome of religious life. In this way, he indirectly promoted irreligion in the form of materially tasteful, lawless sexual indulgence, the result of which would be a profuse influx of low-life progeniture, Varna Sankara, upon the face of the earth. His mission was simply to preface the descent of Lord Gauranga by kindly giving the most condemned conditioned souls a chance to gain the highest good upon encountering the Sankirtan movement with the Lord's maximum munificence in view. Unless the preachers of the Rupanuga Sampradaya systematically and forcefully present the topmost personal conception of God as the supreme lover, the ultimate purpose of Shankaracharya's undertaking will not be fulfilled. Moreover, people will not have the opportunity to clearly see an all-attractive rasovaisaha alternative to the relatively tasteless Brahman conception of spirituality, without which they could hardly have much impetus to abandon the quest for rasa on the mundane plane. Knowledge of the true nature of the original spiritual mellow of conjugal love as the ultimate cause of its dull, shadow-like material reflection effectively alleviates the problem of mundane affinity by the power of superior magnetism. Scientific exposition of the highest materia aspect of the personality of Godhead will naturally preclude all philosophical aberrations thereof to benefit the open-minded. Offenders determined to deny the authoritative persuasion of the Vaishnavacharyas will go to hell anyway of their own accord. What can be done? We should not be overly concerned about that. There's a little more. Do you want to hear a little more? I know it's getting late and I'm pulling another Indra on everybody by speaking up to 1 million o'clock. The following is a transcription from a lecture delivered by Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur. I think it's appropriate to read it in the context of this discussion. During his Brajamandal Parikram at Radhakund in 1932, it was first printed in Bengali in the Gaudiya in 1934. All these days we have not spoken about Leela. Why? Because this is our most confidential asset. This is our only sadhya. But one should not make the mistake of thinking that anartanavritti, as per hearing the naimittika leelas of Krishna, is the prayojana. One thinking like this will never enter into artha-pravritti. For this reason, I will begin speaking about Astakaliya Leela. Now check this out. Here's Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati. He's telling that I will begin to speak about Astakaliya Leela. So from this point, you know, many times we hear about how at Radhakund he was speaking on the Upanishads and all the Babas, you know, went away in disgust. They were thinking that Bhaktisiddhanta is such a highly elevated Rasik Vaishnava, but he is cheating us by only giving this, you know. Huh? Yeah. These tasteless oil cakes of Upanishadic philosophy. Dry oil cakes, right? So he's going to begin to speak about Asta Kalilila. He goes on further to say, I know that you are not ready to hear it. I know that you're not ready to hear it. But we should know such a transcendental idea exists within the realm of devotion. This is why anartha nivritti is essential. Why is it essential? Because after doing at least a sufficient, considerable amount of anartha nivritti, you should come to the position of realizing that there's necessity to do the artha nivritti also. That is, you know, after the realm of anartha nivritti is artha nivritti, pure conjugal service to Radha and Krishna. This is transcendental reality. If we do not know of this transcendental realm, if we don't know about these things, that's why it's important to investigate. That's why it's important to hear about these things from people who are capable of discussing the subject matter. If we don't know about these things, what will happen? Then all our efforts may end in nirvisheshvad. What is nirvishesh? Impersonalism. All our efforts, all of our anartha nivritti and all these things, you know, we're going on with our snik snik ram rams and all these things according to regulative principles. But, you know, if we don't understand what is the purpose of the whole thing, if we don't transcend, you know, the rudimentary practices of vaidhi bhakti and enter onto the platform of at least Raganuga practices, by the grace of Guru and Rasik Vaishnavas, Raganuga Bhaktas, then we may not catch the drift of what Krishna's personality is really all about. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that unless one knows about the materia aspect of Krishna's personality, then one can hardly say he knows Krishna at all. Therefore, in certain respects, impersonalism, because we're not willing to admit Krishna's personality for what it really is. If we do not know of this transcendental realm of Radha and Krishna's affairs, then all of our efforts may end in nirvisheshvad. Do not let your days pass in trying for anartha nivritti. Artha nivritti is also necessary. Anartha nivritti is necessary until artha nivritti has started, not until it is ended, but until artha nivritti is started. What is that artha nivritti? Artha nivritti means when one hears about the attractive nitya leelas of Radha and Krishna and becomes attracted, which is the basis of lobha. When the lobha comes, then the adhikar for engaging in hearing and chanting and remembering Krishna's nitya leelas becomes manifest in one's heart. When that is started, then when artha nivritti is present, then anartha nivritti becomes unimportant. In other words, when you start to pour the milk in the cup and it starts to drive the ink out, then the idea of getting rid of the ink becomes unimportant. What is really important, the more important thing, is the sarup lakshana of Shuddha Bhakti. That is, Krishnanona, what is it? Anukulina Krishnano Shilanam, yes. That is the sarup lakshana of Shuddha Bhakti. To pour on the milk. Pour on that positive devotional absorption. By pouring on the positive devotional absorption as per artha nivritti, then automatically one becomes disinclined. How? Because param drishvad nivartante, raso varjam, rasopyasya, param drishvad nivartante. One becomes disinclined to engage in material activities. On the basis of lobha, one becomes determined that I will not allow any nonsense to come between me and my objective of obtaining the lotus feet of Radha and Krishna in the realm of Braja. That is the mark of one's greed. Those who have chanted Harinam for 15 or 20 years should know of such things. The beginners need not hear these topics or they will misunderstand. These topics are for certain audiences, not for all. Also it is said, Apana bhajana katha na kahibe jata tata. One should not reveal one's bhajan to others. If we disregard this instruction of our previous acharyas, then there may be a permanent fall from the realm of devotional service. By removing the clothes of the gopis, Krishna attained happiness. Now let's see how attached you are to mundane moral considerations. We cannot ask, you see, this Bhaktisiddhanta says, by removing the clothes of the gopis, Krishna obtained happiness. This is Krishna's sense gratification. One, he says, we cannot ask, why is he a sense enjoyer? Let us see Krishna display the behavior of controlling his senses. We cannot ask that. Krishna will not become a slave to our desires. Krishna, by his own will, can show us sense restraint. He did so in his form as Gaurasundara. By that example, he is informing us that no one except Krishna has the right to remove the clothes of the gopis. Our duty is to cultivate devotional service. Do not think that the Astakaliya Lila Smarana is the property of the Sahajiyas. Actually, it is our affair. It has to be retrieved from the hands of the Sahajiyas. Our Sri Gurupad Padma heard these things from Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. That is why he used to tell us various confidential things. We have heard the last instructions from our Sri Gurudev. He said, living in Radhakund would be pleasant if you could deliver it from the hands of 11 immoral men. That's what Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj says, and Bhaktisiddhanta says, now perhaps 11 has increased to 108, and God knows what it is now. So anyway, it's already 10 o'clock, but I did want to read one nice pastime. But these pastimes are for people who are willing to admit that Krishna is allowed to be the supreme enjoyer. These are some pastimes which were written by Gopal Bhatta Goswami in his Sri Krishna Premamrit, which is a very, very beautiful book, meant for relishment, meant for appreciation of Krishna's attraction to the bodily beauty of Srimati Radharani. Does anyone here think that Krishna is not right in being enchanted by the beauty of all of Radharani's bodily features? Radharani has beautiful breasts. Radharani has beautiful buttocks. Radharani has beautiful eyes. Radharani has beautiful, everything about her face, her curly hair. Everything is beautiful about Srimati Radharani. But it's transcendental beauty meant for the pleasure of Krishna. And Krishna has every right to be totally absorbed in prankish fun in relationship to his exploits in the matter of relishing the beauty of Srimati Radharani's transcendental sweetness. Lord Sri Krishna is known as Jananivas, the ultimate resort of all living entities, and is known as the son of Devaki and Yashoda. He is the guide of the Yadu dynasty, and with his mighty arms he kills everything inauspicious, as well as all impious men. By his presence, he destroys all things inauspicious for all living entities, moving and inert. His blissful, smiling face always increases the lusty desires of the gopis of Vrindavan. May he be all glorious and happy. May our Shyamasundar be all glorious and happy. Once, Radha wanted to go to the Yamuna River. Therefore, she began summoning her friends. O Karpur Manjari, she's calling the Manjaris also, get this. O Karpur Manjari, O Kalavati, O Chandralekha, O Mugdhana, O Mugdhanana, O Sumukhi, O Sundari, O Kambukanti. This is the printing is a little messed up, so bear with me. Everyone grab a pot and let's go to the gentle flowing Yamuna to fetch water. Hearing these words spoken by the doe-eyed Sri Radha, all the gopis abandoned their housework and took up pots. Their minds were anxious to see the face of Lord Damodar, and so they started off to get water, creating a pleasant sound with the pattering of their feet. They held the pots on their hips, and their delicate left arms swayed back and forth. So these leelas, you can just picture them happening. They're written in such a nice way. Their left arms swayed back and forth as they walked along. As the cowherd women approached the Yamuna, they smiled beautifully and talked among themselves about the wonder exploits of Sri Krishna. In this way, the gopis joined arms as they headed for the Yamuna to take bath. Because of their jubilant mood, while singing about the glorious qualities of Krishna, some of them slipped or stumbled along the way. When the gopis arrived at the Yamuna, they went down to the bank and entered the current up to their waist, pushing the water with their hands to clear away the flotsam from the surface. They filled their cupped hands and with whatever little they could hold, went to the riverbank to put it in their pots. While this was going on, Sri Krishna was watching from a distance. He smiled as he thought to himself, I shall hide myself here at the base of this kadamba tree and play a pastime befitting Cupid. The gopis will surely decide to take bath in the Yamuna, leaving their clothes on the riverbank. Thereafter, my desire will be fulfilled. After some time, the gopis took off their clothes, put them on the shore, and began to bathe. As they were doing so, they heard a high, pleasant voice say, Oh, doe-eyed girls, do not bathe in the river. Do not bathe there. Come out quickly and put on your clothes. That cowherd boy is coming to steal the clothes of the pretty young girls of Braja. Sri Krishna watched the gopis cautiously and then made himself invisible by his mystic potency in order to perform this pastime. The girls searched in every direction but found no one. Thinking that everything was all right, they went back to the riverbank, took off their clothes, and again began bathing in the water. Krishna Murari climbed into the kadamba tree and laid in hiding on the left limb to watch the cowherd girls. The gopis were all bewildered from drinking the nectar of lotuses while sporting in the water. Seeing this, Krishna desired to steal their clothes. Laughing softly, he stealthily climbed down from the tree. He had decorated his hair with kadamba flowers. Out of fear of being detected, he moved very carefully, like a lion ready for battle. Then he took away their clothes and climbed back into the tree. After some time, Sri Radha noticed that their clothes were not on the riverbank and said, We all left our clothes on the sandy bank of the Yamuna. Now where have they gone? Who could have taken them? Our superiors will naturally look at us with eyes reddened by anger. I do not know what will happen to me now. How shall I absolve myself of this offense? She continued saying, What is more, our superiors have forbidden us to come here many times. Alas, why did I come here to the Amuna? Now I'm reaping the fruits of disobeying the instructions of my superiors. I cannot imagine what they will do with me when I return home. We will never hear the end of this from them. Then moving toward the shore, she saw Krishna in the tree and said, O Madhava, do not hide yourself up there. We all left our clothes on the bank of the Yamuna in order to take a bath. You have hidden our clothes. Now give them back to us quickly. You unreliable fellow, do not tease us by such nonsense activities. If the king of this region comes to hear of this, it will not be very good for you. Smiling, Sri Krishna leaned back against the Kadamba tree and fluttered his fingers over the holes of his flute, thus playing an enchanting melody. His shoulder was against the shoulder of the tree branch. He looked very beautiful, with his locks of hair adorned with jewels. His long eyebrows made him even more attractive. Thus he captured the hearts of the gopis. Krishna, who was expert in laughing, began to laugh softly. Then the gopis slowly moved toward the Kadamba tree with great excitement. The gopis all began to laugh and giggle, which made their limbs shake. Then Krishna called out to them, O young women of Braja, come out of the water and onto the shore. If you come over to this Kadamba tree, I will give each of you your clothes back. When the gopis heard these words spoken by Sri Krishna, their faces turned downwards in embarrassment. They stood there looking at each other's faces. Thinking over their situation for a moment, they said, O Krishna, be kind to us as your servants and bring our clothes to us here at the water's edge. Do not allow the irritable king to hear of such activities. Then Krishna said angrily, If you are my servants, then come and get your clothes. If you do not, I will not give back even one piece. In this regard, there's nothing the king can do. The shy young girls thought over their situation and then came out of the river. They approached the Kadamba tree and stood there with their lotus hands covering their breast. Krishna put the gopis' clothes over his shoulder, came down from the tree and said, Open your eyes and stretch out your hands to receive your clothes. If you do not, I will climb back up in the tree with them and you can all go into the river again. Remember, it's very cold. You know, this is during the Margashirsha month, you know, which is quite cold in the early morning. So Krishna is telling him, you know, go and freeze your buns again if you're not going to comply with my order. Hearing this, the modest girls lowered their faces and told Krishna that they would not do so. After that, Krishna became very angry. Realizing this, the beautifully smiling gopis opened their eyes and looked upon the face of Krishna. Some of the girls extended their arms and begged Krishna for their clothes. Krishna said, Not like that. Stretch out your arms completely. When the gopis heard these words of Krishna, they stretched forth their delicate arms but tried to hide their lower parts by pressing one thigh over the other. Then they said, O Krishna, please give us our clothes. As they stood there, they looked very beautiful with their smiling faces. Laughing softly, Krishna again said, Not like that. Straighten out your legs and hold your arms out to beg for your clothes. He's bringing them to the point of absolute surrender. Thereafter, the gopis thought, What will become of us now? At that time, Sri Krishna enjoyed the outstanding beauty of their bodies, which were decorated with horripilation. Then he delivered each gopi's clothes into her hands. Krishna gave each gopi a tight hug and a kiss. Having received their clothes along with a hug and a kiss, the gopis indicated by signals that Krishna should meet them in a secret bower at night. After this, the gopis, whose faces resembled lotus flowers, returned to their homes. Should I read another one? I love these stories. Sometime after this, one day, the gopis decided to make a trip to Mathura to sell their milk products. Knowing this, Krishna was waiting ahead of them in hopes of getting an opportunity to carry their produce. This chapter is called Carrying the Load. Whose load? Radharani's load. On the request of Radha, and for his own pastime, Krishna placed her load of milk products on his shoulder. He walked along very slowly, as if he were strained, although this was only a deception on his part. At last he reached the bank of the Yamuna. Thus his pastimes are unfathomable. Radha came up behind Krishna, looked at him and said, "Just see, now all the cowherd girls are carrying their loads and will soon arrive at the capital. O Krishna, when they enter Mathura, they will begin selling their milk, butter, and yogurt." She continued, "What are you waiting for? After they've sold their dairy products, no one will want to buy from me. Then I will be forced to sell my produce very cheaply. Go quickly so that I can arrive early." After resting for a while, Krishna said, "O shifty-eyed girl, my feet refuse to go any further, and I'm experiencing a throbbing pain in my back. O young girl, the rays of the sun have completely dried out my throat. Therefore, please rest for some time in this charming forest bower." Radha said to Krishna, "Go a little further." Krishna went a few steps further and said, "O beautiful lady, I'm in pain and am exhausted from the weight of all this milk and yogurt. You are also exhausted from carrying your large breast. Therefore, O you whose eyes are like lotus petals, rest for a short while here in this bower, which is so pleasant because of its soft breezes." Becoming somewhat angry, Radha took a few steps ahead and said, "O Janardan, your back is tired. You are completely exhausted. I am also familiar with your ways. Since you are a cheater, I have therefore engaged you in carrying this load." Krishna replied, "O lotus-eyed one, I'm no cheater, but then neither are you tired from carrying the weight of your breast and hips. It is for this reason that you are engaging me in such a difficult task. I did not realize that the milk and yogurt would be so heavy." Then Sri Radha said, "O Yadu Nandana, if that is so, then put down your burden. Do not drag your feet any longer. Go herd your calves in the pasture. I will engage someone else more capable of carrying this load and thereby reach Mathura very quickly." Slightly laughing, Krishna said, "What you say is correct. You should engage a more capable person in carrying this load, one who will not stop in the middle of the road to rest. O doe-eyed one, I'm going to rest for some time under these trees, and that way I will be able to arrive at Mathura very comfortably." Then Radha angrily said to herself, "This is all my fault. Being unable to get anyone else to carry this burden, I shall have to carry it myself." Then she said to Krishna, "O my Lord, rest yourself comfortably under these trees. The time for selling dairy products is already past." Hearing this, Krishna put the load of milk products down and rested for a while. Then Radha said, "You've rested long enough. Pick up the load and go." Sri Krishna said, "This load is heavy. I'm unable to carry such a burden. If we eat some of the fresh butter and yogurt and milk, this load will become lighter. Come on, let's eat some of it. Then after crossing the Yamuna, we can easily go to Mathura." Radha thought for a moment and said to herself, "Here in Gokul, there are so many young fellows who need money and are accustomed to carrying heavy loads. But I have gotten this cheater who loves to enjoy with the cowherd women to carry my load. What am I to do?" Then she said to Krishna, "Do whatever you please, just as long as you carry my load." Krishna put the load back on his back exhaled a great deal of hot breath and again put the load on the ground. After he rested for a moment, he said to Radha, "You carry this load yourself. I do not have the strength to carry it." Radha thought, "Alas, what a calamity." Then she again spoke to Krishna. "I will give you a large sum of money. Try to pick up the load." Laughing, Krishna said that it was not possible. Reconsidering, however, he said, "O beautiful Radha, if that is what you want, then listen. This is the greatest load of all. I'm incapable of carrying it. But you are willing to pay me a price. That price is the sport of Cupid. I am very proficient in that matter. Neither should you engage anyone else in this affair." Radha blushed with shyness and angrily said, "Such behavior does not become you. Alas, such are the desires of paid labor." Sri Krishna said, "O Radha, this load is very heavy, very great. If you are unable to understand that, then go get someone else." Saying this, Krishna put the load down and started walking away angrily. Sri Radha said, "Come back, come back. Soon your desire will be fulfilled. I shall never again make the mistake of engaging you in this kind of work. O Krishna, please pick up the load now. Be kind to me and quickly carry it to Mathura." Laughing, Sri Krishna said, "If you agree to pay me, then pay me the price I mentioned earlier. After receiving my payment, I will go." Out of embarrassment, Radha stood with her face lowered, but not replying. She gave her consent. Drawing next to her and seeing that no one was around, Krishna suddenly began kissing Radha on the cheeks. Her mind was very excited and her body was covered with horripilation. After enjoying different love sports in the forest bower, he went with Radha to sell butter and yogurt in Mathura. When they were finished selling, Krishna again carried Radha's load until they reached the bank of the Yamuna. Nearby, they found an old boat and boarded it. Thereupon, Krishna played the role of a boatman. Do you want to hear about the boatman? This chapter is called Crossing the River. Excuse me. Very soon, Radha had sold all her milk, yogurt, and butter and started on her way home. When Radha arrived at the Yamuna, Sri Krishna was plying a boat nearby. When he saw her moon-like face, he quickly brought the boat to the shore, got down on the riverbank, and began throwing sand in jest. When Radha, who was still at a distance, saw this, she said, "O Murari, now is no time for playing in the sand. Stop that immediately and attend to your boat. Look, it is almost sundown. The sun is about to set behind the western mountain peak. Crowds of people are passing through the eastern gate of the town of Gokul. Do you not see that rogues and ruffians are beginning to move about here and there?" Smiling, Krishna said, "The river is very turbulent. It is not possible to cross at this time. Just see how thunder is resounding on the heads of yonder clouds. It is almost sundown, and the wind is beginning to blow fiercely." Radha said, "That is what I'm trying to tell you. Please hurry up and cross the river." Krishna replied, "Why not spend the night with some householder nearby? Then tomorrow morning, you can go home." Sri Radha said, "I shall not do that. Look, the sun is already kissing the western horizon. Lightning is beginning to flash. Here, take my valuable necklace as payment and ply this boat across the river." Krishna said, "Now there are strong gale winds blowing. The sun is already setting. See, night is falling. My boat is old and worn out. Just stay here with some householder and tomorrow morning you can go. Radha said, Murari, have I not offered to pay you to take me across? Don't you believe me? O boatman, such words are not at all proper. It is a great offense for a devoted wife to spend the night in the house of another man. Krishna began to laugh and said, if you present me with your necklace, I will take you across the river. Now do as you said. Look, Radha, the waves of the Yamuna are reaching so high that they are touching the sky. O wonderstruck doe-eyed girl, give up this arrogance of a prostitute. Give it up. Your mountain-like breast and large buttocks are too heavy for this old boat to carry. Therefore, what can I do in this situation? Sri Radha said to Krishna, if my dairy products, breasts, and ornaments are too heavy for the boat to carry, I myself will throw them into the water. In other words, she's going to commit suicide if she has to stay over at some other householder's house, right? I myself will throw them in the water. There's nothing else I can do. Sri Krishna said, let it be so. Come into the boat. I shall now navigate the boat. Krishna then helped Radha get aboard and started the boat for some distance. Suddenly the boat began to rock back and forth as if it were about to capsize. Radha became frightened and said, quickly cross the Yamuna. The river has become very ominous. The splashing waves appear to be embracing the sky. The boat has also become very unstable. If the boat should sink, it will be an unfortunate situation. If that happens, then both you and I will lose our lives. Alas, we will have to lose the treasure of our youth. Krishna started laughing and said, That will not be my fault. You are to blame. Look, O moon-faced girl, by touching your breast, the wind has become so strong, it is attempting to send my old boat to the bottom of the Yamuna. Becoming embarrassed, Radha said, O Krishna, now is not the time for laughter. Stop your laughing. The boat is starting to fill with water. O boatman, your behavior does not befit the circumstances. She continued, although my hands are tired from emptying the water from the boat, I cannot rest them. Therefore, you should not laugh like this now. If I manage to get out of this predicament, I will never set foot in your boat again. Sri Krishna said, O lovely girl, I warned you before. My boat is old and worn out. I never know what will happen to it at any time. Furthermore, now the wind is blowing so fiercely. O Radha, in such a situation, what can a boatman do? Radha said, O Murari, I know your boat is like that, but what can I do about it? O boatman, your glories are unfathomable. I present the treasure of my body at your feet. Get me to the other shore, and I will fulfill your wishes. Sri Krishna said, O Radha, now I will try to navigate the boat after such a proposition, right? You stop up the holes of the boat with your blouse. Radha said, the holes in this boat are very large. By stopping them up, my blouse will be destroyed. I can block one hole, but water will still come in through the others. Oh, Hari, what do you wish done? Now my blouse is ruined. All I have left is my life and the clothing covering my legs. Now only they remain to be ruined. Krishna said, this boat of mine is old. I told you that before we left. Now how can we remedy the situation? It is all in the hands of destiny. Sri Radha thought to herself, the shore of the Yamuna is quite far. The trees are all blown over, and these violent winds are most unfavorable. This boat is also old and decrepit, and the boatman is unreliable. Alas, what evil deeds have I done to deserve this? She continued, the sky is blanketed with rain clouds, and this boat is so old, Damodar is completely unreliable. Only today has he become a boatman. The waves of the Yamuna are huge. Why did I ever get into this boat? She continued, this boat is dilapidated. The boatman is a cowherder, and the river is turbulent. The sun has set, and I'm a well-bred, helpless young girl. Alas, how will I ever get across the Yamuna? Then she said to Krishna, by your words, I hastily threw my dairy goods and valuable jewelry into the river. I have also thrown away my blouse. See how quickly the boat is sinking and how far the riverbank is. Radha again said to herself, the boat is full of water and is about to be turned over by the wind. We are sinking into the turbulent waters of the Yamuna. I personally threw away my dairy products and valuables. When will Krishna give up his unreliability? Just see, he is dancing around and clapping his hands. She continued, this unreliable Krishna is purposefully steering this old boat right into a whirlpool and is about to throw the rudder into it. Alas, what a great calamity. The sun has set and it's growing dark. Today, I do not know what destiny has in store for poor Radha. Radha gave a deep sigh and said, alas, I see all my family members standing before me. Sri Krishna will not be even a little merciful to me. Thick clouds are covering all directions with darkness. This old dilapidated boat is sinking under the waves of the Yamuna. I am unable to foretell in what condition I will arrive home tonight. She continued, moreover, powerful blasts of winds keep blowing again and again. This boatman is simply driving the boat around in circles. Oh, Krishna, I have thrown away my costly jewelry into the water. Now stop laughing. Laughing, Sri Krishna said, all right, I will drive the boat. Out of impatience, Radha began shouting repeatedly, quickly drive this boat to shore. Quickly drive this boat to shore. This put Krishna into so much anxiety that in trying to steer the boat, he broke the rudder and damaged the boat. Radha became angry and said, what will be the destiny of such an offender as myself? Oh, Hari, look, the boat is sinking. The rudder is broken, and we are about to drown in the river. Oh, gallant lad, use your hands as a rudder to guide us to shore. Krishna laughed and said, if the boat should become filled with water, listen to the solution you will offer. By taking hold of your jar-like breast, I will float to the shore. Radha said, it is already evening and this boat is stranded in the middle of the river. Life and youth are both very hazardous. You should not be playing like this in such an unfortunate situation. Krishna said, O lovely Radha, please think of a way to solve this predicament. Radha said, you are the solution, not me. Krishna said, I am no cheater, but I do require the payment of youth. Smiling, Radha said, cross the Yamuna. My body is shaking with fear. I will pay you the price of youth. O Lord, my youth is in your hands. In order to reassure her heart, Krishna revealed to her a sandy bank, an island, in the middle of the Yamuna, by his mystic power. Look, my dear, although we are still in the river, there is this pleasant shore nearby. On it is a secluded bower with swarms of bees buzzing all around it. There is also a gentle breeze blowing. There is no cause of fear, and the darkness of night is absent. Seeing that sandy bank, Radha smiled and said, oh, life has returned to me. Quickly guide the boat there. Krishna said, oh, beautiful Radha, if you agree to sport with me in the pastimes of Cupid, I will quickly take you to yonder shore. Oh, moon-faced girl, such fortunate opportunities do not always come. This has been arranged by the grace of Providence. Hearing these words spoken by Krishna, Radha remained for some time with her face looking downwards and considered everything carefully. Then she said, O Sri Hari, let it be so. Your desire shall be fulfilled, but please take me to the shore quickly. Drinking through his ears these nectarine words of the lotus-faced Sri Radha, Sri Hari brought the boat to shore. Thus he arrived on the pleasant sandy bank, that means the shore of this island, the pleasant sandy bank with Sri Radha. Once they were on shore, Krishna said to Radha, Oh, beautiful girl, just see how agreeable this place is. The soft blowing breezes is scented with the fragrance of sandalwood. It is also cooled by the spray of the waves of the Yamuna. This forest bower is nicely perfumed by the pollen fallen on the ground from delicate flowers. Then Krishna looked at Radha and said, by destiny's efforts, you were made with very soft limbs. This is the wonderful workmanship of Cupid, but I cannot understand why your breasts are so hard. Of course, this indicates Radharani's, let's say, lust for satisfying the senses of Krishna, which we should always remember is transcendental and performed with the Satchidananda Vigraha of Radha's, you know, spiritual body. Keep in mind the distinction between iron and gold, or mundane lust and transcendental prema. In the spiritual world, prema has its original form, and that's perverted, reflected in this material world as the lusty dealings between men and women. So then, you know, by joking and laughing, Krishna carried out different sports of love. Afterwards, he forcefully brought Radha back to the shore of the Yamuna, embraced her, and said, oh, my dear Radha, do not forget me. Radha said, you are the elixir of life. How can I ever forget the support of my very life? Saying this, they both parted and went their separate ways. So you can understand, I'm sure, from hearing these pastimes, that they are a little intimate. But that is Krishna. That is Radha and Krishna. We should know something about these things. But we should understand properly. At least get the theoretical understanding. Realization will come later. But without theoretical understanding, you can hardly expect realization to actually come. So there should be some understanding of what is Radha Krishna Tattva. There's one more story. Should I read this one? One more story. This is a great one. Although it's a little short, but it's the last one I'll probably read. On another day, are you all right with this? Are you with me? On another day, the women of Braja took up their loads to sell their milk, yogurt, and butter in Mathura. When Krishna saw this, he said, O Radha, if you rest with me for a while under the Kadamba trees along the Yamuna, I will not charge you any tax. Huh? Radha said, by what authority do you claim to be able to demand taxes? Sri Krishna said, listen, by great effort, King Kamsa has engaged me in the matter of collecting taxes. Therefore, you had better take this seriously and pay me the tax. Oh, you with roaming eyes like a deer, do not delay any longer. Thinking this over for a moment, Sri Radha said, I have nothing which is taxable. You have no need to doubt this. Laughing, Sri Krishna said, O Radha, what is it you are hiding in the cloth over your chest? Just consider this. You do have something to be taxed. Just see how pranky our Shamsundar is. This is our Shamsundar. When you hear these words, you should understand that it is our Shamsundar saying these words. And understand this, what a pranky fellow. After all, he is a Lampata. And Lampata means Lampata. Although it's transcendental Lampata, but Lambata he is. Lambata means divine.